Hi, welcome. This is Dr. John DeMartini. This is one of the most amazing and inspiring shows that you can listen into. If you want to be on the edge of your seats, if you want to open up your heart, if you want to expand your mind, and you want to meet incredible people, stay tuned because you're just about to experience a transformative radio show that will change your life. And you're listening to the Dr. Pat Show that's coming up right next.
The following audio is via a Skype call.
Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show, talk radio to thrive by. Powerful, inspiring, and coming to you live, bringing you stories of people like you and me, busting through and living life full out. Get ready to dare to wonder what your life would be like if you knew you could not fail.
Hey, everybody. Welcome, welcome, welcome. It's so great. Yeah, this is part two. This is our second hour. Thank you all for tuning us and turning us on. Listen, I get to interview some fantastic people. And Benny, the other day, we were kind of trying to look at my past radio shows and interviews. And, you know, I have a couple of folks that are really interested in putting out some information because this is our 10th year with TTR, right? It's also, you know, the transition from Crust Busting to the Dr. Pat Show. So there's that. But people have asked me what is it that I have learned that I found really different in the 16 years I was doing this. And I said, well, I have to say that if there's anything that I want to talk about, it's the books that I've seen written over the past 15 or 16 years about God. And they asked me, how so? And I said, well, what I've seen is, I've seen new and interesting information that as a kid, I would naturally be drawn to and ask those questions. But more and more and more right now, we are looking at sides of the sacred feminine and Judeo-Christian traditions. And people are trying to make sense of what's true, what's not true. And if you're a couple of my friends who spent a lifetime with the interpretation of beautiful, beautiful kept scrolls, like the Dead Sea Scrolls, there's a new level of excitement. And if there's one thing that those folks wish, is that they would live to hundreds of years, just like some of the people in the Old Testament did. But here today, we're talking about what has been revealed and what people have researched and what perceptions as well as information are being put forth. And that's today's show. When I think about when two authors come together with the body of work that, you know, spans a lifetime or two lifetimes, and then they write the book we're about to talk about, When God Had a Wife, The Fall and Rise of the Sacred Feminine in the Judeo-Christian Tradition. When I think about what Lynn Picknett and Clive Prince have done, and this book, they tap into a level of consciousness that we started to see emerge about a decade ago, I think, in our pop culture, where we started to see the emergence of mainstream conversations about just this. So today, we're going to take a journey. I don't think we're going to get to everything in the book. I know I put a bunch of post-it notes in here, especially on the chapter of Jesus and His Goddess. But let's get going with these fabulous, fabulous authors, researchers, conversationalists, and passionists when it comes to talking about Revelation. Thank you both for joining me here today.
It's brilliant for being on. Thank you very much.
Hello, Pat. Good morning, where you are.
Yeah, good morning.
Yeah, Well, it's great to have you here. I mean, let's start with sort of the little summary I put together based on my own perspective. One of the things I've noticed since I started to do the show is there's a shift and a change, not quite at the pace I think that many of us would like to see, but the shift in the pace that we're seeing is really conversations that were not part of a mainstream, that were usually part of scholars and academics talking about what they thought really did happen. Now we're starting to see it in our movies. We're starting to see it in books. I want to ask each of you, from your individual perspectives, what do you think has changed to get people more and more interested into not what was previously thought, but what might have been? What was that about? Who wants to go first? Lynn, do you want to go first?
Yeah, I'll go first. I think it's a huge irony, Dr. Pat, that that, you know, the scholars, as you say, are the ones who have known about all sorts of things that most ordinary worshippers would conceive of as being seismic, electrifying, you know, almost shocking. But scholars and academics have known about various things for decades and kept it to themselves pretty much. So to them, you know, a lot of the stuff that we would certainly be talking about isn't shocking, but to the average worshipper in a synagogue or a church, it might, you know, cause them to blink a bit. But the thing is, the irony is that really it comes down in a huge degree to one airport thriller. In the early years of the 21st century, which was, you know, the Da Vinci Code.
Yeah.
I mean, it actually kicked off, and this is not an exaggeration, as I'm sure people will realize, it kicked off a global conversation about Jesus and Mary Magdalene. Were they married? You know, were they in love? What was going on there? Were they involved in some kind of a ritual together? It kicked off a whole thing about, you know, Leonardo da Vinci's paintings. What were the clues in there? You know, it kicked off a whole thing about, what are these Gnostic Gospels, the Gospel of Philip, the Gospel of Thomas, the Gospel of Mary Magdalene, are they real? You know, and it got people talking, and the excitement, you know, it didn't totally go away. It sort of entered into the consciousness. So you had people at the back of people's minds who haven't even read that book or haven't even seen that movie. It's there now, and people feel they can talk about it. The shame of that is, of course, that there's still an awful lot of snobbery involved surrounding all that, which means that although the academics have known most of that stuff themselves, they kind of say, oh, well, you know, we can't even soil our eyes by looking at this book, or we don't even want to bother talking about it. But, you know, it actually did start a whole new way of looking at biblical characters, way of looking at the sacred feminine. And the irony was, it was an airport thriller that did it.
Yeah, yeah. And by the way, an airport thriller that really opened the door for conversations by not the beginning of the movie or the journey or the book, the beginning of the book, but what it led you to ask, the question it led you to ask at the end, a compelling question. But you both have been, well, first of all, you're long known for your conversations, your writing, and your revelations, right, that go against what is called common belief. However, having said that, you know, there are people that have a common belief in whatever religious philosophies they believe in that too question some aspects of it. And I want to go back and really, Clive, ask you this question about it. You know, as unsettling as this may seem, this is also the war of the world, so to speak. And I'm not talking about a zombie movie. I'm really talking about the war of the worlds, which I believe also goes on inside of us, but literally a war about what would happen if the truth would be revealed.
Well, yes. I mean, that's what we're all sort of trying to get towards, the truth. Well, I suppose, in the end, when it comes to truth with a capital T, we all have to choose our own truth, our own interpretation. I think what Lynn and I are more concerned with is the fact. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm just saying that a lot of things have been known to scholars for decades, if not centuries, which don't get out to the the average worshipper in a church or in a synagogue. And so, for example, when Dan Brown wrote The Da Vinci Code, in which he talked about these Gnostic Gospels, it's the first most people had ever heard of them, even though they've been known, certainly since they were discovered in 1947, but some of them even before that, going back to the 19th century. So there's this kind of, you can understand the sense of disbelief when thinking, well, nobody in my church or my Sunday school has ever told me about these things. Somebody must be making this stuff up, but in fact it's not. And this is, truth is that kind of very subjective thing that we all have to sort of make our own decisions on that. But they still should be grounded in the facts, and the facts should be known. Facts shouldn't be hidden. And okay, because often we're talking about things that happened millennia ago, maybe, we're not absolutely sure exactly what happened. There are different differences of opinion, but still it's there to be debated. So that's and what we're trying to do in this book is to bring together all the factual scholarly information, the archaeological evidence that backs up this idea that actually the God of the Old Testament did have a wife. It's actually, in scholarly terms, this is not controversial, but in religious terms, it obviously is hugely controversial.
Well, and really, this is what the Great Divide is about. You know, it's really this sense of people and having being taught or having been introduced to a version of things and not being allowed to question things. I mean, you know, I am the kind of kid that grew up initially in the Catholic religion, and at age 6, I was expelled from Catholic boarding school. Now, what would you have to do at age 6, right? I mean, think about it.
What would you have to do?
Well, interestingly enough, I was sitting in the Catholic boarding school over a long weekend because my dad didn't come pick me up. My mom was very sick and actually was an addict and then an alcoholic. And back then, they didn't call them that. But, you know, I was sitting there and I was literally dead across from the 9th Station of the Cross. And I looked up at the 9th Station as a little 6-year-old and I just heard Jesus talk to me. And I ran to Mother Superior. Well, first I grabbed on Sister Michael Anthony, and she was completely out of her mind that I would even interrupt this mass. Grabbed me, took me to Mother Superior, and had me tell Mother Superior what I heard. And so I told Mother Superior, I said, yeah, Jesus told me that my mom was with him. And Mother Superior picked up her head, and she had a note from my dad. My mom had just died.
Wow.
And so, but can you imagine what that means, though? See, you and I would talk about this as a wow. When you are in what we're talking about, and we're going to get to what you reveal in the book as well, this is something that doesn't really happen. And if it does happen, it goes against every belief of certain religious philosophies. And they, each of them have their own beliefs, values, this you do, this you don't do, right?
Yeah.
But when I read your book, what I read is the revelation that allows us to live in the in-between place, right?
Yeah.
The in-between place. And I want to ask you, and we'll go ahead and skip the break. I want to ask you, you've written many, many books, many books. You're known worldwide for what you've done. I'd like to know what you discovered in writing this book that has changed each of you. Is there any one thing that you might point to?
Oh, it's a big question. Obviously, the book itself, the information, the research has been going on for a long time. So it's built up So over a long time, and then, until we actually sat down to write the book. And even then, always when you start to write the book, during the course of it, you find out new things even then. Mm-hmm. You start off thinking you know what the book is about and what's going to go in there, and you come across new things. I think what the thing that's come across to me is, although we kind of always knew this thing that, yes, there was in the ancient world, and even the ancient Israelite religion, there was space for the sacred feminine. So we kind of knew that almost from the beginning, but the more the research went on, the more the sheer amount of evidence for this that came out, and just realizing actually how big it was, how different the role of women was in the Old Testament days, in the Israelite days, the roles of prophetesses, the roles of wise women, even when it comes to sort of matters of warfare and battle, things we kind of think of today as being, that's the province of men. I just actually, say realizing how huge this was and how different it makes the image we have of the ancient world of the ancient Israelite religion. It's just kind of just the scale of it. It just kept growing and growing.
And also the goddess's tenacity, the sacred feminine's tenacity throughout the Judeo-Christian tradition, that although the various patriarchies officially banned the worship of the goddess, she took different forms in the affections of the masses, really, or went underground and was loved and cherished secretly until the time was right that she would come out again a bit more and maybe in a different form. So that's why it's not a mistake, by the way, in the subtitle of our book. The subtitle is The Fall and Rise of the Sacred Feminine, because that's how we see it. That was kind of what was amazing to me in this research, that in a sense, she never let go, but she's making a comeback. And actually, one thing that's just dawned on me, and this doesn't sound particularly modest, but I think Clive and I have a hand in her coming back. Mm-hmm. So that's quite a big thought.
Yeah, I would say you do. One of the things that I was struck by is the time frame, because initially when I saw the book, and we were talking about having you both come on, I had a very different perception of where I thought things would start. And then when I started to read the book, it dawned on me that this particular book and what you've written here starts way earlier than I thought it would, because you went back, right? And I want to talk about that. Why was that important, to go back as far as you did to begin the forward conversation about this?
Well, as far as we personally as authors were concerned, we I suppose we kind of wanted to write the prequel to two of our other books. One was The Templar Revelation, which inspired The Da Vinci Code. One was The Masks of Christ, which is our more recent book. But both concerned the sacred feminine in Christianity, mainly Mary Magdalene. And it's almost like the goddess herself was saying, look, I'm sorry, this is not where I began. You know, go back, go back, go back. And it's almost like we were compelled to do the prequel, which is this book.
Yeah, there's so much richness in going back and doing that. And the reason I say that is we're now seeing, I think, a resurgence in our pop culture of goddess and goddess energy. Why do I say that? I say it because most of the time we don't look at what goes on in our pop culture and the consciousness of our pop culture. As a matter of fact, we kind of throw our pop culture out into the world of cosmopolitan and say, oh, well, that's that. But that's not really that. You know, it has a massive impact. And once upon a time, it had a massive impact just in the United States, but it doesn't anymore. It has a massive impact in having people think about what's possible. And we have seen this, and you've referenced the Da Vinci Code. I'm seeing it now when I see how young girls are now looking up to role models in movies, right? that go back in time, but yet represents the goddess energy, or some people call it an archetype, right? What do you think is happening with this consciousness? And is it because much of what you've written here is really longing to come out and be told, not in the back room of a small closet, but really in a more profoundly global way?
Well, it's a fascinating thing, because it, you know, sometimes it becomes like a circular thing of what is driving these changes. You know, as we're discovering more and more about the ancient goddess, say through archaeology and so on, we have more information to go on, which makes people more aware of that. But also at the same time, there is a growing awareness among people, you know, the way the role of women, the place of women has changed in the last few generations. And therefore, you know, it's changing the whole way, it's changing the world for men as well. So in part, there seems to be this growing consciousness anyway, you know, something within ourselves, just a growing awareness of the importance of not just the sacred feminine, but the feminine of all kinds. But that's gone hand in hand with finding out more. You know, like we're talking about the Da Vinci Code, we're talking about the Gnostic Gospels that people have become aware of. So sometimes you wonder which is driving which. Mm. You know, is it the fact that we have this growing consciousness that is getting people to look for this information more? Or is it that the information that we're getting is driving people into this kind of consciousness? I think it's the two. It's the two things growing together, which makes it kind of very exciting time, because I think it's growing in a way that, you know, as Lynn was saying, there has been this, the goddess wouldn't go away. There's always, whenever there's a time of resurgence, it happens, but it's never really caught on as much as it is now. So I think it's a very exciting time for all this. It's like it has been building up for a long, long time.
Lynn, I want to ask you this question before we go to break. One of the things that I'm really struck by, and really struck by it in your book, are the references to the women that many of us do know and the women that many of us may not know. Clearly, Mary Magdalene has always been an enigma, so to speak, for some people, but for other people, a savior. For those people that have looked at Mary Magdalene and really had a sense of, wait a minute, who was she really? You know, some folks, you know, have presented information that said, wait a minute, you know, she was a successful businesswoman. She actually funded, today's language, funded. Why do we have this ridiculous, almost conspiracy-like desire to really keep the information and the work and the empowerment of the women that at least you've mentioned in the book and many, why do we have to keep this suppressed?
It's historically, that's what's happened. It was quite deliberate. Our evidence is that, and our message, if you like, is that Jesus and Mary Magdalene were an item. They weren't legally married, but they were passionately in love. Jesus was besotted with her. They were spiritual equals. They were ritual partners. She was his priestess. The thing is that basically she was his beloved so much that, you know, in the Gnostic Gospels, certainly Jesus is always saying, wherever the gospel is preached, you know, her name will be celebrated. She'll sit at my right hand throughout eternity, etc. And, you know, the very early Vatican, if you like, the very early church fathers knew all that. They knew that Jesus was in love with her. They knew that Jesus wanted her name to be celebrated. And they were determined to put a stop to it, even if it meant tacitly insulting their Lord, because they did not want generations of powerful women, empowered women. They just didn't want this. They didn't want her to be a role model. So you have the extraordinary happening in, I think it was the sixth century, where you have the Pope basically saying, oh, Mary Magdalene was a sinner, she was a woman, therefore she must have been a prostitute. Therefore, I'm telling you, she was a prostitute. And that's, you know, it was basically, has gone down in history, she was, that's what she was. When, you know, and she's become the brand name for female shame, when in fact, you know, the evidence is she was the least ashamed woman in history. You know, I mean, she was the most amazing woman, as you well know, and, you know, a lot of your listeners really know. But this was a deliberate conspiracy and cover-up in order to prevent generation upon generation of women modeling themselves on her.
Yeah. I mean, and one of the things I love is where we are today and what we have discovered and what the future may hold and what's to be discovered. I want to take a short break. When we come back, I want to go through the book. For those of you just tuning in, I have a great conversation here with Lynn Picknett and Clive Prince. They are the authors of When God Had a Wife, The Fall and Rise of the Sacred Feminine in the Judeo-Christian Tradition. I want to make sure that once you all come back, you know that if you have questions on this, phone lines are always open, 1-800-930-2819. And we'll give you the website, tell you how you can get a copy of the book. When we come back, I'd love to hear from each of the authors as to what is it about this particular book for them, the writing of it, how it's written. What is the most profound message that each of them sees in this book for who we are today in the world and who we are to become? Let's take a short break, everyone. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Kimberly Carlson, and I would love for you to tune in to All In Healing Radio, where together we will begin to experience health, happiness, and harmony in all areas and aspects of life. Join us every first Tuesday of the month at 11 a.m. on TransformationTalkRadio.com. All In Healing will help you release layers of negative beliefs and energies for radiant health, deep joy, and greater abundance. Visit me at KimberlyCarlson.com.
This is Debbie Pokornik with a moment for standing in your power. Self-control begins with noticing how different feelings present themselves in your body. When you're feeling sensitive, for example, your chin might quiver, tears might well up in your eyes, and your voice might catch in your throat. Anger, on the other hand, might appear as tension in your jaw, back, or arms, along with clenched fists, heat in the upper torso, scowling, and a strong desire to yell. The more aware you become of your body cues, the easier it will be to recognize when you're on the road to disaster. Choose the emotions that cause you problems, then start noticing and logging the body cues that come with them.
For information and to work with Debbie, visit empoweringnrg.com. That's empoweringnrg.com.
Learn to live in the light and unveil the authentic you with A Time of Healing Radio with me, Felice Diana, on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Tune in every third Tuesday at 11 a.m. Pacific as I help listeners understand sacred fusion energy and how to connect to the spirit that fuels the very life we live. Explore the journey of spiritual transcendence and ultimately discover the path to peace, love, purpose and wholeness. For more information, visit atimeofhealing.com.
How do you feel? Just okay? Well, how about you tune in and get ready to be more with The Healing Hour with me, Doc Martin, every third Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. I'm ready for your questions, and I can't wait to help you find the answers. Every month, we'll have a new live call-in show with innovative topics and a powerful hour of healing. To learn more about me, visit DrSharonMartin.com. See you there. I'm going to be here. You won't want to miss it.
It's time to get your life back on Burn Bright Today with Jennifer Marcinelli. Tune in each month on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Learn to move from the darkness of burning out to the light of burning bright. Jennifer is redefining stress and the energetic causes of burnout, shining a light on process to get your life back. For more information about Jennifer and her work, visit BurnBrightToday.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. Welcome back. Great to have all of you tune us in and turn us on. I'm Dr. Pat. If you want to find out more about me, go to the Dr. Pat Show, or you could go to Transformation Talk Radio. Lynn, Clive, I would love for folks to know two things. One, how they might get a copy of the book. And then also, how can they find out more about you?
Well, we find out about us, well, and by the book, can be done through our website, which is www.picknetprints.com. Picknetprints, all one word, PICKNETTPRINCE. But I think you're going to have the links on your site as well, aren't
mm-hmm.
you? So that tells people more about us and what we do and what we have done in the past. So you can get the book through there. Well, there's a link through to Amazon. You can get the book most places, I hope. Yes, please do. Because I think, the message of the book is important to Lynn and I, but it's, we only really write books when we think we've got a message to give to people.
Mm-hmm.
And we thought we do have one here trying to bring together both the scholarly academic information, but not in a scholarly and academic way, putting it all together to show people how much evidence there is dotted around in all these kind of little, academic books and academic journals where, people have made really important discoveries, but they only really talk about it amongst themselves in the mm-hmm. Universities and things. And when you bring the whole thing together and put it in one place and put it in context of the history, the story that emerges is actually quite amazing. The thing that's kind of really leapt out for me is showing, I was going to say how different the past was, as I said earlier, but it's how different the religion is, both the Judaic religion and the Christian religion, and in a way how they're not what they're supposed to have been. They've been missing half the story all the time because of eliminating the feminine from it. Maybe the half the story they have is fine, but it's still only half the story, and we're getting the other half back now. It's being recovered, so we're getting the complete picture of the history, the roles between men and women, and certainly women's place in the history, but also in the religion. The fact of the sacred feminine in the religion, but also the roles of priestesses. Who knew that there were priestesses in Solomon's temple in Jerusalem? For most of the time, it was there, not an occasional accidental thing, but that was actually the norm, to have a goddess worshipped alongside God in the Jerusalem temple with a priesthood that included women. And once you know that, the vision of history and of the religion changes, and so it becomes more complete.
I want to talk about what I said to you during the break as well. Thank you for that. And that is, I've read many, many books, and, I even ventured out and was fascinated by Q and the Gospel of Thomas. And, I'm not an academician when it comes to the level and the body of work you've done, but curious about why are people talking about this and what is it that we're in search for, and why do we not necessarily believe the way things were told and why they were told. But your book does something interesting, and I would love for you to take folks on a journey of it, is it does in many cases start out in a place where people can connect the dots, more or less connect the stories, and say, well, yes, that started there. This happened here. But, I didn't know about this. I didn't know about, some of the dots that you both connect. And there are several of them. I think many people probably haven't ventured to really look at or understand Sophia. And Sophia is talked about just beautifully in the book, and in terms, you know, Sophia's secret. And so I would love for you, Lynn, if you could start, take us on a journey of how and why it was so important to connect the dots that you have here to create this tapestry.
Well, in a sense, all our books are us connecting the dots.
Yeah.
First of all, of course, in order to do that, you have to find the dots.
Yeah.
You know, it's a pretty long and complicated journey, although the actual writing of the book might not take that long. But as Clive said before, you know, we have, in a sense, been researching this book for decades, a couple of decades, because, you know, that's what we do. It's bubbling along underneath. And then finally we get to write it. And as I said earlier as well, you know, it almost this book almost demanded to be written, because we had assembled many more dots than we could actually join up in our previous books. And so there were a lot of dots left over. And, you know, they were aching. They were yearning to be made into some kind of pattern. That's what we were, you know, trying to do. And we often describe ourselves as historical detectives. And in that sense, we are, because we kind of like to strip everything back to the, you know, the basics, and if you like, rebuild it given the evidence, you know, not really taking much notice of the, you know, the standard interpretation, although obviously we'll take that on board, but actually, you know, seeing what else is there. And, you know, we were pretty amazed ourselves, you know, as we joined up the dots, at, you know, the tenacity of the Hebrew goddess, you know, from her early days as Asherah, who was worshipped, you know, by the ordinary people in the countryside. And, you know, they would not let her go. And even though various regimes tried to ban her worship, they just, you know, she hung on in there. And as Clive said, was even worshipped officially in the Jerusalem temple. Now, that was jaw-dropping to me. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, how is that not jaw-dropping? You know, when we've been led to believe that Yahweh, that, you know, this stern, single male God was all there ever was, and into thinking any other terms would be blasphemy, would be outrageous. And there it is. It's a fact. God's wife was worshipped with him in the Jerusalem temple. It's a historical fact. And, you know, archaeology has backed this up. So there were more dots to join up in the pattern, because, you know, little figurines of Asherah, the goddess, have been found, and little inscriptions inscribed on bits of pottery, rather sweetly, you know, blessing people by Yahweh and his Asherah, which I think is rather sweet. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Mr. and Mrs. God. And, you know, all of it was very exciting. And, you know, we when we got towards the end of the book, you know, having seen the continuation of the goddess in various forms, so as Lady Wisdom, as the Shekinah, as Sophia, and then finally to get back, as it were, to Mary Magdalene and various other characters, as you know, at the end of the book. But again, with a slightly fresh eye, seeing other dots to be joined up, that was exciting too. So we've been excited by this journey, and we seriously hope other people are too.
Yeah, and this is part of the conversation that I think so aligns with what I call a global consciousness about finding out more. So what I mean by that is, and I would love, Clive, to hear from you, is what I mean by that is, it seems like overnight, but it's not, but it seems like overnight, all the things that perhaps we were told are not sitting with us very well. And so there is more than a curiosity to try to find out why that is. What do you think, Clive?
Absolutely is, and I, you know, certainly welcome it, because, you know, if you think about the way religion has been, you know, for most of our history, it's been something that we're told. It's been something we've been told, you know, by priests or rabbis and bishops, and you were just told it. You were given the official version, and you weren't supposed to question it. And of course, for many centuries, you know, going back into the past, to actually question it got you in a lot of trouble. So you weren't, in a way, that the religion was about not thinking for yourself. And that has certainly changed dramatically in the last couple of centuries, but it's snowballing. It's getting stronger the whole time. But there are still people out there who just want to, you know, have a position of authority and tell you what to believe and what to think. But people are not satisfied with that anymore. People want to work stuff out for themselves, and, you know, to question what they've been told. I mean, sometimes I think it swings an enormous way to the other way, and people reject all of religion. You know, there's a school of thought that now says, well, the way Jesus has been taught to us is wrong. So they swung the other way, and there's a whole lot of people saying, well, Jesus never existed, which we don't believe. But you know, everyone's got to come to their own conclusions, their own interpretation of those, of the information that's there. But that's the whole point, because, you know, in the past, there are two things about religion traditionally, certainly I'm thinking primarily of Christianity, is, as I said, it's mainly something you were told what to believe, and you there's not much leeway you're given in how flexible you can be in interpreting that. And you know, aside from that, it's all been very negative in that it teaches you what's wrong about yourself. You know, original sin. You know, it's all about it's all about the negative, and that's changing too. People are saying, no, actually, it can be a really positive thing. You know, religion is supposed to tell us what's good about ourselves, not what's bad. And that's a whole shift that's part of what's going on.
So, I think it's an enormous shift. I think the one point that you're just mentioning there is enormous shift by religions that normally don't make that shift. And I think that's what we're seeing, as you just pointed out. And I wanted to just ask you a little follow-up to that, because I do see a new level of positivity. I mean, you know, this is a positive talk radio network, and we've been that for 15 years. But it's a new kind of positivity. It's positivity of possibilities. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's what you're talking about with shifts in religious/spiritual beliefs. It's moving from, I really don't have much to do or say about my destiny, to wait a minute, there are choices I can make and step into the possibilities of an expansive universe. Is that what you're referring to as the shift, something like that?
It is. I think it's also being kind of realistic about things, because it's not going from being told everything's negative to going to the other extreme and saying everything is absolutely fine and we don't have to worry about the future, and you know, there's nothing wrong with the world as it is, which very clearly there still are great problems that still need to be we need to address. But I think there's more of a positivity about how those things can be addressed, that they can be addressed. Whereas if you kind of look back in the traditional way of thinking, back to original sin and everything, it's always been told that actually there's not a lot you can do to make the world better. You have to leave that bit up to God. He'll sort that. He'll produce a miracle. Whereas now we're kind of more thinking, well, we can actually make our own miracles now. Mm-hmm. So I think that's it. It's not the sort of completely kind of mindless positivity that's refusing to face the sort of reality of things. It's actually is facing reality, but reality as it is, and not, you know, it's not all this kind of negative and everything. You know, you're totally dependent on God's mercy to save you. It's up to us, which of course takes us back to, you know, the early Gnostic way of thinking, which is, you know, basically salvation's in your own hands, whether individually or collective.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things, and Lynn, I want to ask you about it. The analogy that I have, albeit really simplified, and I'll just say it, is from a let's just call it a psyche of hopeless to a psyche of hopeful. And I find hope is a common denominator when I think about this for myself and also for others. You know, there's a place that you can get where you more or less surrender into a life that you think you'll never have. And it's without hope for that. And now what I'm seeing, and we see this across the board with the new energy, it is about hope. And that is really defined in a very personal way for each person. But don't you think that the information that you're providing is also that which fuels this new level of hopeful consciousness? Because it does provide, let's just call it intuitive gaps in what people feel and what actually they've been told.
Well, I hope so. I mean, I hope very much, that word hope again, I hope very much that, you know, our book, our little book, can help, plug the gaps in people's intuitive understanding of Christianity and the sacred feminine and the Hebrew goddess. Or, you know, maybe the people have felt that, you know, really there had to be a feminine angle on Christianity. There had to be a feminine angle on Judaism. But where was it? Well, hopefully we can provide some pointers that. But basically what we always say we do, and hopefully we do, is we don't just present somebody, you know, as it were, a lump of information and say, there you are, that's it. What we do is present somebody with a story as, you know, basically our findings. This is what we found. But we also provide notes and references so that the reader can chase it all up, look at exactly what we found. Maybe, you know, you'll come to different interpretation, different conclusion. But at least, you know, we've presented you with the evidence and said, you know, there's the evidence that we found. You look at it. There is hope here. Look mm-hmm. at it. You know, and I think it's not just hope as such. It's the kind of fizzing energy of potential. I think we all feel, you know, this is a new day. You know, anything could happen in this day. Good things as well as bad things.
Yeah.
You know, we're not all worms crawling along the ground like the Vatican used to teach, you know, that we could only, you know, know grace through the priests. And even then it might be a bit dodgy. You know, it's actually now I think individuals are feeling that they can find their own salvation in their own way. And it's immensely exciting and immensely empowering. And it's beyond hopeful. It's making your own potential day by day.
Yeah. Well, first of all, let me thank you both. I would love, again, for you to tell folks how they can get a copy of the book, as well as how they can find out more about you and also your other book. So let's do that first, if we could.
Well, yes, you can buy the book and discover more about us through our website, which is www.picknetprince.com, picknetprince, all one word, which is picknetprince.com. And there's lots on there about our other books, about what we're up to, including, you know, doing this. That's on the website. And you can order books from Amazon via our website, or indeed just straight from Amazon, or through any good bookshop. So this is, you know, absolutely delightful that we have the opportunity to talk to your viewers in this way.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for that. I have a few minutes left. I want to ask you each this question. I want to ask you, now that you've written this book and you've written many others, what would be your vision for the impact that each of you would like to see happen as a result of people reading this book? Clive, why don't you go first?
Oh, that's what would you like to see happen? In a way, I think it's for us to tell people that are part of a religion, how they deal with it, how they take this on board. But I think the important thing, certainly for me, is that people are aware of this information and interpret it as they will, or they go and ask some questions of, you know, their priests, their rabbis or whatever. It's a matter of getting that conversation going and getting that questioning going. That's really what I would hope for, that people, it raises people's awareness of these things. It gets them talked about. It gets them thought about. You know, as individuals, we have to kind of just look at this the way the world's going, the way consciousness is changing, and seeing how that applies to ourselves and you know, what things in our past or in our characters we have to let go of, what things we start to move towards and embrace. So, you know, there's a lot that can be done with this. It really affects kind of, you know, all aspects of our lives, I think.
Yeah. Wow. Thank you. Lynn, how about you?
I think the thing I would like to see, which would be immense, would be for Jewish women and Christian women not to feel so alone, but to feel part of a tradition going back, way, way back, and actually just feel all those priestesses, all those goddess worshippers crowding in on them, patting them on the back, saying, go for it, sister, go for it, you can do it. You know, get the message out there. You know, there is, the goddess, there is the sacred feminine. You are part of it. You are sacred. You are feminine. Go for it.
Wow. Thank you both for joining me here today. Personal message. What do each of you want to leave us with today?
I think I want to say, first of all, big thank you for allowing us to be on here. I want to say that, you know, the very end of our book, and I'm not giving anything away here, but the very end of our book, we do make a plea for a balance. You know, the goddess had her god, the god had his goddess. And I think we should bear in mind that, you know, we should aim for a balance between male and female.
Wow. Boy, I'm with you on that. How about you, Clive?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, also I'd add to Lynn, you know, thanks for giving us this opportunity to talk to you and talk to your listeners. And the thing for me, yes, absolutely agree with what Lynn has said about the balance. Obviously, I'm looking at it from a male perspective and seeing how, you know, it's not just this information can be used to empower women in their religion, but it's something that empowers men too, because it's finding the sacred feminine in ourselves too, and you know, and how we relate to that. So you know, it's not what we've put in this book. It's not just a book, certainly, you know, for women. It's not just a book about women and about the sacred feminine, because it is about that balance. You know, there is a sacred masculine as well, but it needs to be balanced off with that. And that balance was there in the past, in the beginning, and it's sort of tried to sort of surface all the way through history. And now we're in a time in history when it really can happen. You know, we really can move towards that. So, let's look forward to that.
Yeah, let's do that. Well, thank you both for joining me here today. Thank you so much for a lifetime dedicated to truth and information and presenting us with the facts and helping all of us that have remained so curious about what we don't know venture out and discover what we could know. Thank you both for that.
Well, thank you very much indeed.
Yes, thank you, Pat. Thank you for your show.
Thank you.
Well, I love this, everybody. The book is called When God Had a Wife. Thank you all for tuning us in, turning us on, and make sure you stay tuned for another hour on TTR. We'll see you then.
preceding audio was via a Skype call.